You're listening to an OTB AM podcast. You can watch the show or listen live every weekday morning from 7:45 AM. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream for more stuff just like this.
One thing I would say, Joe, is we were all looking at Doughty there. He was great on the game the other night, that great documentary, and how wonderful it was looking back at that. There was a guy on that from our own club, Dick of the Church, and he was 100 last March. So 100 years doesn't be long gone. Like, we have a guy there that has lived through it. Mm. We need to be very, very careful. That game we had last, the two games we had last weekend were wonderful. But if we stay going, Joe, with the club structures that we have at the moment, right around the country, and you can bring up the stats, and I'm not blaming anyone, I blame myself, I'm a club man, I blame everyone, county boards, the GA themselves, we're all the one on this. But we need to sort out the clubs, because the last year anyway has been terrible, like, as regards, you don't know when you're playing, you don't know what's going on. I know there was new structures, so that's fair enough. Mm. We now know what's happening. But I would be a little bit worried, Joe, in that we're talking about giving lads breaks and maybe extending back out the All-Irelands to September. No problem. But let's remember, the GAA communities, the communities now in our parishes, Joe, are revolving around the GAA. That's what makes Ireland what it is. Like, you know, one time it was mass, or you go to the creameries and you go to, you know, maybe doing down at the local shop. But now with television and all this, it's really only with, say, sport. And in Ireland, it's the GAA. So I would say there's a word of warning out there that if we want what we had last weekend, which was brilliant, and we're all raving about it, in 100 years' time, well, then let's look after the clubs.
Yeah, it's a good point there from Tommy. He's always keen to bring up the clubs at this point of the year, because we have these conversations. It's like this conversation is for January and the rest of the year is for talking about football, and then the conversation comes back up in November for a silly season. So it's important to be having these conversations now, that if you want to protect the very greatest parts of the game, like we saw last weekend in the hurling, you've got to protect the grassroots.
Yeah, and I think it's the big thing about it is, and Tommy hits the nail on the head, and it's funny when you start to see Kilkenny people speaking about it, and Kilkenny club people, because obviously, you know, there's only really one code in Kilkenny, you know, excuse, no disrespect to any Kilkenny footballers out there. But, you know, so even when they're starting to feel the squeeze, you know, it starts to, so you can imagine then when you go to the big jewel counties, what's happening. And again, we're not going to go over this because there's reams and reams and reams, and it's just starting to come in now, you know, like, I mean, there's three junior games in Meath in 8 days, three junior championship matches in 8 days, and there hasn't been one before that for nearly 12 weeks. This kind of crack, right? So, absolutely, it's vital, massively vital, and it needs to be looked at now. Because, you know, I saw someone tweeting last week about the hurling and saying, oh, isn't it great that, you know, there's about six to eight counties now who could compete for the All-Ireland final. And I was saying, wow, you know, and this, the individual was saying, you know, in his day when he was a kid, there was only kind of three to four. So I was saying, okay, so over a 30-year span, you've managed to get it from four to eight. So does that mean that in the next 30 years, we managed to get it from 8 to 12? Like, I mean, it's too slow. You like, I mean, all of the, and you even look at the Super 8s and you look at the way the hurling has changed, like, some of those lesser teams and the thing, it just needs to, everything needs to be built back up. And my feeling is that you can, the only way that the competitions and competition above everyone is obviously with the funding and everything else, but it all starts at the club level. And if the club level is given room to breed, and room to expand, and room to, as Tommy says, that when new people come into the community, they see the GAA as a viable option, that it's not like a thing of, you know, it's great when you play it underage, but then when it comes to 17, 18, you're like, when am I playing? What am I doing? And then you just fall out of love with it. Like, we all know this, the drop-off rates are exceptional. You know, like, I mean, it's an alarming statistic. And the funny thing is, it's just still head in the sand stuff. Like, yeah. I mean, it's still, like, we, the CPA have asked weeks ago, months ago, like, I mean, we've been banging our heads on this, you know, and we met with Tom Ryan, we met with Horan, and we've said, listen, we want actually our stuff being put in. We've actually demanded now that we actually have our stuff being read out at a management meeting to try to see, can this thing be moved on, which is a blank canvas that, you know, people are brought in, not only hopefully CPA, you know, executive members, but obviously people from the outside of GAA, people from within the GAA, but get people in to a room and just try to get started. Because there's no point working on this, as you say, in October, November. Mm. Like, I mean, let's start working on it now. The issues are there. Everyone knows the issues. You know, it's not like it's all of a sudden we're just like, oh, right, oh, there's problems with, you know, the reliability of fixtures in the club world. That's yeah, there for donkey's years.
Do you think there is actually parents kind of not bringing their kids to GAA training as underage or whatever it may be because they feel that down the line there's not going to be an opportunity for them? Because it does seem that at least at underage, at, like when you were a child, when you were in primary school, there is still it is still the most popular sport by a long shot. That still the other sports are almost way ahead of the GAA in terms of elitism, that the kind of initial instigation of your GAA life is still going to happen, that's not deterring people. Like, you're right, people are dropping out, the dropout rates are alarming, but I don't think it's got to the point yet where it's actually affecting the very bottom. It might do, eventually.
I think it will, because I think there has always been, the GAA has always, so in school, you know, it would always be, you know, you're either playing football or hurling or whatever it is, right? So there is that. But I think the availability of the other sports and even the availability of people to, say, coach the other sports has been less and less. And I think that is becoming more and more now. So, you know, you go to places now and there might be a basketball coach, and it's not necessarily just in the strongholds of certain counties, but certain sports are going to get more popularity as the parents who have either dropped out or who have played those sports will want their children to do it. So I know plenty of fellas who would say, I'd rather let my son play soccer or rugby than go back into GAA. They're not suffering what I suffer type thing. You know, and there's a lot of people who have said that to me. You know, they're not going to go through what I did, you know, giving up my time for this and this and this and this and this. And this is not necessarily fellas who played inter-county, but a lot of guys who played club stuff and just got absolutely fed up with it. And fed up with the fact that they went from 18 to 33 or 34 and nothing changed. Like, I mean, really, it is madness when you think of that, you know, for that long. Tinkering here around the edge and stuff, but no real massive change.
From your sense of sitting down with them, like, how highly do Tom Ryan and John Horan value the club game? How high on their priority list is it?
I think they personally value it highly. That's the sense I get. Now, I wasn't in the meeting. Well, I met with John before, but I wasn't in the meeting with Tom. I was away at the time. But I'd know Tom as well. And I think they value it, absolutely. But sure, how could you not value it? It is the bedrock. But I certainly think that there's other areas within the GAA that don't see it that way at all, because they see that you've got the cash cow here. And if we keep the cash cow going, and if we, you know, kind of fired up every now and again, as in, let's change the structure of it, let's do a Super 8, let's do this, let's do that, whatever we need. Yes, the club is there, but at the same time, is the club really, like, I mean, one of our main issues about, like, we were thinking, well, how do you turn the heat up on this? But imagine trying to get, you know, a militant situation within the clubs. Like, I mean, you could never organise something because it's so disparate, you know, and it's so, you know, one club would do it, one other club wouldn't do it, maybe half the members would do it. But if the GPA decided, which they have done before, that they want to do something with the inter-county fellas, it's done.
Yeah.
You know, they decide to pull up their socks or pull down their socks or go out late for it. Remember they did it a couple of years ago and won the league matches. They all left late out of the dressing room. That was just a sign of strength and a show of strength and a show of solidarity. So, you know, there has to come a point, and I think it honestly, genuinely is coming on. Like, I mean, the amount of stuff we see coming through, we did the recent survey. We had an unbelievable amount of respondents who came back and actually took their time, not only to answer the survey, but then write in notes and actually come back. We sent it out to all the media and say, this is what I'd like to see, or whatever that comment was. But man, there was some amount of anger in that and some amount of frustration. You know, and that's
the specific thing that kind of kept coming up in those notes.
Just the regularity and the fixture, just being able to sit down and to be able to say with some level of certainty, with a high level of certainty, that I know when I'm out and I know when I'm not out. Mm. And that's all people want. Yeah. I don't think that's much. That's not much of an ask.
But you're blue in the face from saying it. Like, it is a top-down approach that's required to actually give a uniform regularity to each county, because it's going to need to be a national thing. Just on that point, here's Noel McGrath on the lack of fun in the GAA. He was speaking to Mara Trass and Ikealik this week.
One thing that strikes me is that obviously with the advent of social media, you see rugby players, football players, nearly retweeting or putting things up on Instagram of them having fun, being out and about, and their supporters and their fans are retweeting it saying, fair play to them, aren't they having great fun? But if you were to put the same video up, I think the reaction might be different.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you, and I think it's just probably a culture in the GA that probably needs to change a small bit and just let players have a bit more freedom in what they do and enjoy what they do, because to be honest, every player that's playing is putting in serious effort in their training, in their diet, in what they do, and they're planning around maybe some with families and their work and all that. So like, I think it's just about enjoying it and trying to enjoy it a bit more outside of your training and away from things, and as you said, and just people in other sports who seem to enjoy it a lot more or maybe do a lot more things outside of it, and that's nearly more acceptable. So I think it's just something that has to be maybe a cultural change, and maybe players will just have to, I suppose, go with it and see if people will respond in a positive way to it.
Noel McGrath there, speaking to Mara Trasa this week. It's an interesting point, isn't it?
That, like, I mean, even that talk is very dangerous, I think. You know, and I think more and more we've seen that maybe players are getting a bit more brave over the last few years to say that, because probably people would not have admitted it as much. Or maybe just with the last number of years and with definitely a sea change with the increase in intensity and training and everything else, and this whole idea of you're nearly cocooned as an inter-county player, that, you know, it's kind of come to a breaking point. And the thing about it is as that level of as I say, people say the professionalism, but as that kind of level of intensity and being a cocoon and everything else is an inter-county, as that increases, it actually drip feeds down into the clubs. So the really top senior clubs will be, you know, they pick everything from the inter-county setups, be it training methods, whatever it is, and they will then decide, well, actually, this is the way to go. So you can see it. I even see it. You can see it in club football over the last kind of 10 years, how not drinking bans, but everything is kind of, you know, you're meant to be more professional in your manner and da-da-da. And the fun has been eked away and eked away and eked away. I think probably the sensible people, and there's maybe some sensible coaches or sensible clubs, have actually decided, no, we need to actually bring that back in. We need to bring it back in a big way. You know, we need to be able to go and enjoy, it's not necessarily drinking and alcohol, but it's actually just going and enjoying your time with your teammates, being, having a barbecue, having whatever it is after training, you know, just getting a bit of social aspect to it again. Because ultimately, that's the best things I remember from club football. You know, the kind of the social, the camaraderie that you had with teammates and different stuff like that. And meeting people and enjoying it, you know, doing your stuff on the field and training hard, but also having the other side of it.
Yeah, definitely. There's some interesting comments from Rory Beggan in the build-up to this weekend's game that kind of ties into that a little bit. Just before we get to that, I just want to play you this. This is a Sharon Courtney on the alarming slide, I should say, of the Monaghan ladies football team.
Look, we've had a good group of players and we have been competing there for a number of years, but probably 3-4 years now we've been losing one or two every year, and it's kind of paid the price for this year. Yes, there's a couple of good younger players coming along, but I think unfortunately in Monaghan it is maybe slightly deeper rooted, and I hate to say it, but at underage level we haven't been winning for a number of years. And yes, we've unearthed maybe a couple of young players in the last number of years, but probably not enough to replace the caliber of player that have left us in recent times. So unfortunately, I think, and I don't want to say it, but it could be a while. Hopefully we don't go down to intermediate, but I would like to see us staying in senior, and hopefully we will be able to compete in the next couple of years again.
Yeah, Sharon Courtney there speaking to Mara Trasa at Croke Park. Now, this is the kind of conflict we have. So just to bring you what Rory Beggan was saying, he's carried in some of the papers this morning talking about the success of the Monaghan men's team, and he talks about the work done by the club development programme that they have and the players it's harvested, and also he mentions the success of the development squads, but also the criticism that the development squads have been getting from someone in the county. And I can only imagine that the reason why the development squads are getting criticism is that you're taking young players at 14, 15 and you're putting them into this machine. Ultimately, though, this machine is giving Monaghan one of the most successful periods in its history at senior football. Mm. But ultimately, it's come as a result of not destroying fun, but lessening the amount of impact or lack of focus. on fun in the on the underage game.
Yeah.
So like, where's the balance here? Like, there's two different stories to this. There is the great story of Monaghan, and there's the great story of potential, you know, potentially having fun as an underage footballer, which doesn't seem to be existing anymore.
I think you can actually run both at the same time. So not necessarily the same time, but you can run them both in tandem. So I've no problem with academies, development squads, call them whatever what you want. But I have an issue with it being to the detriment of the club team. So, you know, you take, as you say, a 14, a 15-year-old, you basically say, listen, there's all your buddies, but you're coming down here and you're going to meet a new set of people who you may or may not gel with, who you may or may not enjoy being around. You know, a lot of pressure, be it family, next thing you get all the gear, you know, your Monaghan gear, your Meath gear, your Kerry gear. All of a sudden you're in this machine, as you say. I have ideas about it that I think, you know, it causes issues as you come into a senior panel, because if you've been a member of these panels for 4 to 5 years, 6 years, maybe the main man, maybe not, but on these teams, that when you come into a senior panel then, say, that the expectation on you is absolutely is high, first of all. The expectation amongst yourself is high. Your family is high. Everyone feels that you will just transition to senior football. And it's a different kettle, completely different kettle of fish, brought in with everything else in life of going into college or workplace and everything else. So if you fail at that, or if you get dropped, or if something, some manager challenges you, you know, do you try to throw the dummies out of the pram? Seeing as how all the way through from your 14, 15, you've been the main man. No one has ever really challenged you, you know. And maybe it's about, you know, a lot of other questions come in. But on to go back to the other point, my feeling is that no problem with it being at certain times of the year. So in other words, do it at a certain time of the year. Just play a tournament. To play something for 4 to 5 weeks. You know who the best players are. You know who the people that you want to get in. No point having them in there once a week for 12 or 16 or 18 weeks or twice a week or whatever it is, and putting them in gyms. And also then actually train the people, train the coaches, go into the clubs. The clubs have to, you know, and I think clubs are, I certainly see it in me, the clubs are developing their coaches within it. And it's not saying that they have to go and get all the medals and all, or all the badges and stuff, but it does help. Sure. But actually just get, you know, so it's not Johnny's dad who has never kicked a football in his life, just standing there and kind of making it up as he goes along, that there's someone there, be it a club officer or whatever it is, or a development person or whoever, that is able to guide you and say, listen, this is what we'd like to do it, or maybe here's some exercises that can be done. It's simple stuff, really. It's just a bit of organisation, and it's a bit of communication, and it's getting things set in stone that actually then that person can get a bit more confident in the drills they're doing. Like, I mean, there isn't 200 drills in GAA. You know, it's some basic stuff, you know, hurling and football, catch, kick, you know, doing run. You know, like, I mean, let's just be honest. But, you know, there's no need, I feel. You can take the elite or the guys who are standing out and the girls who are standing out. Yes, you can bring them down and try to raise the bar. But raise the bar of the club as well. Raise the bar of all the kids. And because you never know who might develop when they hit 15, 16, 17, 18. But it is, I think I would hate to see it that it goes that way, because I think if it goes that way, in other words, if it goes the development squad route and gets more emphasis on that, it will absolutely put a death nail in the club stuff.
And perhaps Monaghan should be holding up the example of somebody like Conor McManus, who obviously didn't make the county team as a minor, as opposed to a slew of people who've come through the development squads, that there is a possibility for both of these things to exist.
Absolutely. Like, I think I said to you before, I remember playing against McManus. He was a half back. He was like a whippet, you know. Like, I mean, he's put a little bit on, but he was, like, I mean, very, very small and fast. But, you know, I can imagine him underage. He probably struggled, you know, in a sense. But he's a guy who obviously put his head down. So he showed, like, I mean, I never played minor, never played under 21, went for trials and stuff like that, but never made it. So it's always, like, I mean, persistence and, you know, development. It happens at different times. People getting serious about it, you know, people then not getting serious about it. As I say, the pressure of a person who's been in there 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, and then all of a sudden they're like, I've been playing for Meath or Kerry for the last 6, 7 years. I'm sick of this. Mm. You know, before they even get into playing in Croke Park. You know, by the time they're 21 or 22, they've already had 7 or 8 years of inter-county, you know, in that whole bubble, I suppose. That's not healthy. I don't feel that's healthy. And I'm not saying they take them completely away, but I just think that the club really, you know, you go to most of the successful counties and the standards have been raised in the clubs. The clubs have themselves gone, I need to take ownership of this. But to really to allow that to happen, the people at the top have to say, well, that's fine. You know, you can take ownership of that, but we're going to help you, because I'll tell you how we're going to help you. We're not going to have a competition that actually makes people walk away from the sport.
Yeah.
We're going to have a competition that actually brings people into the sport, that they actually go, do you know what? That's a game I wouldn't mind playing again, because at least now I know that I have X time off and I know with confidence when I'm actually going to be playing and when I need to train.
Yeah, it all seems fairly commonsensical, but then again, does common sense often come into these decisions? That's kind of a different conversation.
It's not too common.
No, it's not. Common sense isn't too common, as they say. We'd love to get your thoughts on what Anthony's just been talking about for the last few minutes. If you want to tweet us at Off the Ball or comment on the stream, if you happen to be watching on Facebook or YouTube, we'll read them out a little bit later on in the show. We should talk about Monaghan. We should talk about Galway. It is their clash in Salt Hill at 6 o'clock this Saturday. Mm. Conor McManus, we've mentioned there, but is there a sense around this whole game that it's a little bit like Belgium versus England, where Galway approaches game not knowing what to do? Is it better to win the game? Is it better to not lose the game, but to play a weakened side, having focused on Dublin for the last 2.5 weeks?
I would go with you on that. Yeah, I think the Dublin focus. It's hard. I think it's all going to be down to the psyche of Walsh. You know, like, I mean, is he the type of fella who's, no, we keep the throttle down, you know, we keep winning every game. Or is he the type of guy who can be, you know, pragmatic about it and a little bit smart about it and say, well, okay, I know there's certain individuals who are maybe flagging a little bit. I want them really, you know, get the engines completely recharged. And as you say, I also want to do my work, and I want us to do our pitch work based on potentially Dublin. And let's get really focused for that. Like, when would you rather meet Dublin? Semi-final or final?
Semi-final. Clearly. Like, I mean, especially from a Galway perspective, isn't it? Like, given the fact that they haven't been there for 17 years, of course it's Dublin, so, and it's like your first opportunity to make that final for 17 years as well. So from your perspective, it's going to be white heat of battle stuff if you're close coming down the line. But I just feel that All-Ireland final has more of a meaning to Dublin going for 4 in a row, and they'll be able to eke that one out.
Massive. And I agree with you, because not in the other way. I don't think going for 4 in a row will heap pressure on Dublin. They will see that as a massive challenge for them. Mm-hmm. That's the psyche of that team. So that'll actually, I feel, will actually increase their level of performance, not hinder it. But whereas Galway going in, that hasn't been there since 2001, that is a big one. And I think that may actually, well, not, you know, I think if I was to play the margins, I think you would say that, well, Dublin will be, as I say, the performance level will increase, whereas Galway's level just with that pressure, what will that level of expectation, that level of pressure, that level of kind of, we haven't been here in so long. And, you know, they haven't performed massively in Croke Park over the last number of years. Like, I mean, what was it? The first win was not so long ago, in a long, long, long time. Mm. So there is still that hoodoo of Croke Park. I personally, if I was them, and if I was him, I would much rather meet Dublin in the semi-final.
Right, okay. Have we seen them at their best this year, Galway?
I think we've seen them at what exactly they need to do for everything. Like, I mean, I was genuinely worried for them in that first half against Kildare. I didn't think they had showed anything massively going forward. I thought they were being a little bit stifled. I didn't feel that they were... I thought they were playing probably a little bit within themselves. Now, they did start to open up the shoulders in the second half. You know, definitely they did. Walsh came into it a bit more. You know, Comer was relatively quiet, but they started to get their half-back line really firing. But I tell you what they do have. Like, I mean, I know Ewan McKenna was writing about it, and he's right. But listen, as winners... And I know he'll probably say, oh, well, that's typical. But you do need that little bit of a cutting edge. You know, he was mentioning the fact that, you know, they've certain fellas who won't let you away with anything. There's a lot of off-the-ball stuff going on. There's a lot of... Now, I do completely agree with him. If I'm pulling and dragging out of you and you turn around and hit me an elbow, next thing I'm going down hole in my face, I've no time for that at all. And that definitely needs to be stamped out. And people need to be keeping an eye on that. And not just... umpires or linesmen, because generally what happens is a linesman sees you reacting, not me. Yeah. And you get the red, you know, kind of a la like Flynn. But they're doing a situation where they need to bring that. All the top teams have had that over the years, and Dublin have it. Like, Dublin don't let you get away with too much. And they certainly know where they need to put an X on a fella, and they go to do that. So they are bringing that, and they're not being, and people would have said, oh, sure, Galway are naive. That's what always would have been thrown at Galway the last number of years. You don't say that about this team.
No, definitely not. You do sense putting an X on a fella there, Conor McManus, and how they go about putting an X on him. And it seems like nobody would be surprised if Conor McManus is coming off the pitch there and he's kicked 3 points, 2 from frees, 1 from play or something like that. And you get the sense that if Conor McManus existed in the GAA world 15 years ago, he would have had a far better time than he did. Like, just seeing what he did in Clonus a couple of weeks ago, the fact that there was no sweeper played, no stringent defensive system, it was an attacking team they were up against. It's the exact opposite this weekend. Mm. And as like, he's in the argument for the best forward in the country.
Yeah.
And still, you wouldn't be surprised to see him come off with kind of a frustrating performance.
Like, I mean, if we were setting up this weekend, you're saying to yourself, you just look through all the statistics, you look through everything else, you look through the amount of times he's on the ball, you look through the amount of times he actually gets shots off. You're just saying, listen, we just tie him down. It's very simple.
Yeah, it is. And it's not even a matter of kind of man-to-man tying him down. It's a matter of having one man on him. And you can trust in the Kevin Walsh and Paddy Talley game plan of that zonal defence without the ball, which ultimately is in effect 2 sweepers.
Correct. And what he has changed his game, and to be fair, they have changed him recently in that they used to look for him with that initial ball. Mm-hmm. They don't do that anymore. So, you know, people talk about McCarron and you know, they kind of say, so he essentially now works off the ball winner. So he'll come around on a loop, which is a little bit more difficult because it's very blatant as a foul. So if I'm winning it and you're coming around on a loop off me at speed the way he can, and especially amongst bodies, and he's so agile and he's got a great step, and he's also able to kick really, really quickly. Like, he gets his shot off. As soon as he gets the ball, it's nearly gone. You know, so there's no real time. If you're coming around and I'm defending you, first of all, I can't have anything on you. I can't have hands on you. I can't be dragging you. So he's allowing himself to get in positions whereby, you can't really do too many of the dark arts around him. You know, it's not this initial ball in, he gets it, he turns you. A lot of the time it's now him working off other people, which is still difficult to stop. But the only way you stop that is you put a lot of people in that area.
Yeah.
And that's what Galway will do.
They sure will. There's a body of work at this point in terms of conversations that have been had about that Galway defence.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the biggest incentive on that pitch in Salt Hill on Sunday is for Monaghan not to lose that game. So what's their plan going to be?
Like, I mean, it's tricky. They're going to have to try to, like, I mean, you're going to have to try to come up with something completely different, I feel, because I think if it is the McManus show and if they're going in there, and O'Rourke is a sensible coach too, it isn't going to work for them. I think that they need to use him nearly as a foil. You know, they really do. They nearly have to hope that he chips in, he gets his freeze, and that near the end of the game he can get something. But they really need, I think they need to use a power running game with the Hugheses. They need to go straight down through that middle. They need to really expose Bradshaw at 6. They need to try to drag him out.
Is he a weak link?
I think he's really excellent coming forward. But my problem is he has a sense now, because of the bodies around, that he will follow. So he'll go with you as an 11. He'll follow you anywhere. He'll follow you. He'll get dragged. And if you can drag him and get down through that middle, because you haven't really seen the Hugheses this year. Like, I mean, they haven't really set it at, like, the way they have in previous years. You know, you'd see them barnstorming runs, coming through, getting goals. So I think that's an area whereby, you know, that they could have a bit of success.
It's interesting. You would wonder, would somebody like Desi Mona at 11 do a job then for Monaghan, just to try and drag Garrett Bradshaw around the pitch and try and focus on him?
Correct. You know, I think you need to do something like that. Kelly is obviously, you know, that's a loss. So you need to maybe just, as I say, throw. I think if you think of Galway, what have Galway been built on? They've been built on that defensive structure. So you need to look at, instead of saying, well, yeah, they have a really good defensive structure, but I tell you what, we're going to beat that structure more so than anyone. You need to say, well, okay, that's their strength. So how can I take that strength away from them? And how can I at least reduce that strength? So you need to look at the Paddy Talley thing. I'm sure they've looked at, well, who has done well against a Paddy Talley style defence in the past? And how have they done it?
Yeah.
And then try to replicate it. And then try to fit
the players that you have into those areas. And that, for one, you know, you should be a manager on.
Well, you know,
the Desi Moan thing could be a great idea.
I do enough on Football Manager, Burton Albion, Champions League winners 2013-14. Who's going to win?
Galway.
Galway it is. So Galway not playing Dublin, despite the fact that they might have been focusing on them for the last couple of weeks. They'll get them in the final, though.
Also you have to think, right? Who will come in on the other side?
Yeah. Like that, we'll get to that in a moment. That yeah. is a tantalising fixture in Ballybuffet. Enda McGinley is standing by. Good morning to you, Enda.
Morning, all. Anthony.
So, in terms of this weekend, it's an interesting one. Like Molsey was chatting about those Owen Mulligan comments on the Paddy Power website a little bit earlier on, and we've got to this level now where the Omagh sidelines are becoming the most intriguing aspect of this championship. We've had Mickey Hart's comments, but now Mulligan is saying that the Omagh dimensions were tightened for the sake of Ballybuffet, that they, all they wanted to do was prepare for the dimensions of Ballybuffet. Do you buy that?
No, I don't. Owen is a loose cannon at times. He'll always come up with something pretty fresh and different. I would be surprised. Like, Tyrone would have been so focused on that Dublin match. Like, if you were approaching Dublin and had in any way one eye on Ballybuffet, I think you would have been absolutely annihilated, which would have been much more damaging than in your preparations for Ballybuffet. So Tyrone have played in Ballybuffet many times. They haven't had many victories there, but they know what they're facing, and the dimensions of the sideline, look, for me as a footballer, I don't think them things really matter in the cut and thrust of a championship game of this sort of size.
Yeah, for sure. It does seem like an incredibly tough place to go. Obviously, Donegal, 21 games there, unbeaten at the moment. I'm not sure, do we give that a bit more weight than the Ulster semi-final last year, where Tyrone, a lot of us forget, beaten by 9 points. They walked out the gate. I know that wasn't in the Cool Park, though.
Yeah, the last year's result, I think, is very different. I think Tyrone are significantly changed this year. Donegal too, under Declan Bonner, have significantly changed. So I don't think last year's game will have a huge bearing on it. The other thing about one-sided victories in the modern game, I think they can occur without teams being too far off the mark. Just if a team gets behind and starts having to come out and chase, as Donegal did, then it just opens up and suddenly you can get beat by an absolute cricket score. So I don't think that is a big bearing. Their home record, I think, does have a decent bearing on this. I think Donegal are weakened coming into this, losing McBrady and Owen Van Gallagher. I think that's two huge losses. But I think that's probably evened out by the fact that they've home advantage in Ballybuffet, and they'll be hugely confident of using that home advantage. So for me, it's sort of, if them two men had been fit, Ballybuffet could have been the deciding factor, but I think it's probably all evened up at this stage.
Yeah, does it change how Declan Bonner kind of views the game? Because initially you might have felt that Donegal's focus will have been on stopping Tyrone's running game, and that's almost giving yourself a sense of an inferiority complex. Whereas now, with that brilliant record of McCool Park, psychologically you feel that you're on a par with Tyrone, if not better than them, and their game plan might not be to stop Tyrone, but they might feel that Tyrone have to stop them.
Yeah, to a certain extent, I think that this game is set up to all about how Declan Bonner copes that balance. I think we know what Tyrone are going to do and what Tyrone are going to bring. They changed the game slightly in Dublin. I thought they were much. I think Tyrone showed how much they've advanced this year against Dublin compared to last year, where they engaged Dublin better and kept themselves in that game better for longer spells. The irony was their best spell was when, even in Mickey Hart's own words, they sort of, They went for broke in the last 10 minutes and threw off the shackles a bit. How much of that was Dublin stepping off the gas, I don't know. But I think Tyrone will take good confidence from that. For Bonner, he'll know he's went with more attacking format this year. They're not dropping as fast back. They are still, like every other team in the country, getting back in numbers should they need a raise. But they're keeping more men up the pitch more often. And so it's as much how Tyrone deal with that. I think Donegal will be fairly happy. They'll work very, very hard at trying to track the Tyrone runners out of defence. But I don't think we'll see Donegal sit back too deep. I think they'll keep trying to play the way that they're playing.
And how will Tyrone go about counteracting that?
I think Tyrone will do exactly what they're doing. I think both teams will be fairly confident at this stage in their system of play. I suppose that's one of the worries, is that this game could maybe fail to live up to expectations. I suppose a lot of the football has this summer. I'm sort of half hoping that the atmosphere that's going to be on the ground, which I think is going to be incredible, and just the tension that's there will in fact make the team sort of come out of their shells a wee bit. For me, I think Tyrone will continue to sit deep and really look to punch hard in the break. The sighting of Michael Murphy is going to be a crucial factor of this, and that's where Declan Bonner probably kind of most impact on Tyrone's thoughts, because you have to adapt your game to where Michael Murphy is, at least with one or two players, and your bias between attack and defence. So that is probably Declan Bonner's easiest way of influencing how Tyrone are setting up.
Yeah, of course, famously last year, Padraig Hampsey marked Michael Murphy in that match and outscored him from defence. Like, do you expect Hampsey to drop back and mark Murphy no matter where he goes on the pitch?
I would imagine so. Whenever a pairing has worked with you before, the last thing an opponent wants to see is that same player coming back onto him again. But Murphy probably is, if anything, is playing better this year. His display in full forward against Roscommon, I suppose, reminded everybody of the talents that we all sort of know he has, but we too rarely get to see him in full flow. So for Tyrone, that would be a wee bit of a worry if he drifts into full forward. But again, Mike Demy has dealt with him before in there. Another big duel is the marking of Ryan McHugh. Dublin done a brilliant job on Ryan McHugh in the Ulster final, that last Ulster final between Tyrone and Donegal. Ryan McHugh picked up Petey Hart, but Petey Hart continued to play his defensive position. So whenever Donegal were attacking, Petey Hart dropped off and just took his position in Tyrone's defensive rear guard, leaving McHugh a free man. And in the first half, McHugh cut Tyrone to shreds while he marked Petey man on man whenever Tyrone were attacking, and that nullified Petey. In the second half, Mickey put on, I think it was Rory Brennan, onto Ryan McHugh and nullified him. So McHugh's a key player for Donegal, and that matchup will be key, trying to keep Petey Hart free, because he's a key player for Tyrone, and trying to nullify Ryan McHugh. And I've got a feeling Brennan could be introduced early enough if he's not starting.
Okay, very interesting. Like, the obvious other element, other weapon that Donegal have with regards to the Roscommon game especially, is Aaron McNeilish. And you do wonder what autonomy that will give to someone like Michael Murphy. Of course, Ryan McHugh's role is quite uniform. We know what's going to happen there. It's how Tyrone counteract that. But I wonder how much of a variation we're going to get on Murphy because of McNeilish's form that has just kind of exploded into the public consciousness once again against Roscommon. And he's a real inside target man for Donegal now, that they might get away with not having Murphy in there beside him.
Yeah, Oran McNeilis inside. Like, Oran McNeilis, he's a player you just love watching. For the rest of us ordinary players, he's a player that makes you jealous because he makes it look so easy. Him being inside was sort of new to me. I'd always seen him out around the middle and admired him sort of as a playmaker, spreading passes, shooting from distance. The fact that he can be an effective target man does absolutely free up Michael Murphy to an extent, but Michael Murphy still carries a certain threat all of his own, that, you know, he's essentially unmarkable. But Tyrone having marked McNeilis in that new position, then Donegal, it's the impact of Hugh McFadden and Liam McLoone out around the middle, two players that have found great form. And with them sort of four big men, they've sort of midfield nailed down and a bit of a threat inside. And I suppose that's why Declan Bonner feels he has the wherewithal this year to go with a more attacking front, because he can sort of keep strong in midfield and keep a bit of a target inside. So that's, again, to the earlier point about Tyrone's victory last year, I think Donegal are a different side from last year, and will pose a much stronger test this year to Tyrone.
And give me a sense of the rivalry. Obviously, you know, you've played in many of them. A brother of mine was at the Donegal Roscommon game, and he was heading up to Sligo Arford, and they pulled in to watch the Dublin Tyrone game, and some of the Donegal fans pulled in, and they were actually singing "Come on, you boys in blue" in the bar. So obviously, they pinned their support where they wanted it. Like, is it as intense as you've ever seen? I remember being up there a number of years ago for News Talk, and it was absolutely savage stuff. Like, I mean, you could feel the tension in the ground. How's it going to pan out?
Was that match up in Ballybuffet, Anthony?
Yeah.
I was doing ready with that match, and the tension and the physicality of that game was something else. The Tyrone Donegal rivalry has really come out of really nowhere. The famous comment, and I heard it, and it was in McGuinness's book, I think, about Racy McManaman, a non-game in Eden Dark, it was a sort of a secondary pitch in Tyrone, because the main pitch was I think Waterlogue, and we were beating Donegal, and there was a wee bit of tension, and Ricey says, "And you're you'll never amount to nothing. Yous are chokers as such. And I remember being a shot of it, and you sort of always knew Donegal's talent, and I sort of winced. I thought, Christ, Ricey, don't tempt fate there.
Don't poke the bear.
But as far as, you know, that comment went back into the Donegal dressing room and was like a catalyst for McGuinness's whole turnaround of that squad, and then they changed. Then they beat Mickey Hart in championship 3-4 times in a row, which simply no other team has done, and that really hurt. Then Tyrone eventually, with changing their whole style, Tyrone sort of adopted that Donegal style of brought in by McGuinness, got to parity and managed to turn them over in a hugely tense Ulster final. So yeah, there's plenty of tension there. Just McMahon's battle with Michael Murphy stays strong in Donegal's minds. Remember that day up in Ballybuffet? Yeah. That was a real marking card because for me, Justy didn't do anything wrong, but he brought a absolutely to the line and maybe tiptoeing over the odd time competitiveness and shut down Donegal's main man. And Tyrone were proud of Justy, and Donegal were raging for Murphy, and just. That's just one of the many wee things along the line. Stevie O'Neill got landed on his ass by one of the McGees coming out. McGee and Steve was our star player. Now he just got caught flat-footed. But them wee things, like the physicality of that game, the tension of it, it's just massive. The problem was with the Ulster final end, which was, I think, maybe a year or two after that game, and it was set up to be a classic, and it ended up being a complete chess match for maybe 60 minutes. And only in the last 10 minutes did the game suddenly burst to life. Murphy missed a free at one end to go two up. Then Petey Hart and Sean Kavanagh scored outrageous scores to get thrown into the lead. And the game was phenomenal in that last 10 minutes. I suppose it's all about this modern football. If these two teams just went toe-to-toe, it would be phenomenal, and it would be too close to call. What I fear we'll get is more of a really structured game, and it'll still be too close to call. But yeah, the tension and rivalry, and the way this game's set up, this is an old-fashioned Ulster Championship match with a path to an All-Ireland semi-final. On the better side of the draw, you're avoiding Dublin. So for both of these teams, they know that winning this game gives them a realistic shot of the All-Ireland title. Donegal's Ulster title won't count. And it's been played in a small, tight provincial ground with, like, it was sold out, I think, at the start of the week. The county board issued notes to clubs that there will not be any more tickets available. So it's going to be a phenomenal, phenomenal atmosphere. I can't wait, but it'll not be for the faint-hearted.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be whoever holds the nerve at the end of the day is going to win this one. Like, I presume the game you're talking about there, Miles, is 2013, the one in McCool Park, the preliminary game.
Yeah.
And, like, obviously famously that day as well, and you had Niall Morgan's curious relationship with the local crowd in Donegal, and obviously he was trying to go on the front foot there, you felt, trying to G up his own crowd, and when you look at the results, you could say it kind of backfired, but ultimately it's hard to know how these players will react psychologically. You can either have the fire of Niall Morgan, or you could easily see somebody choking. And when you talk about targeting players, you can be sure and certain Mickey Hart is going to be picking out Ryan McHugh as the person that they could potentially wind up.
Ryan McHugh will probably get a bit of winding up, but possibly the likes of Jamie Brennan. It's usually the fresh fish, so to speak.
It's like prison rules.
throw up a few new players, the likes of Michael McKernan, the likes of Frank Burns, who's the first time in sort of this type of environment. Jamie Brennan of Donegal with a few others too, and them young players of Donegal choked against Tyrone last year. You know, that was the big thing. Your Kieran Thompsons, your Langans, them boys absolutely failed to turn up in Clonus last year. My fear is with my Tyrone cap firmly on, hat firmly on, my fear is that them boys are 1 year older, will have been stung by last year's non-performance, and will up their level significantly. And with all of that young talent that Donegal have, and again, in that safety of being at home in Ballybuffet, I think Donegal's performance will significantly up. So it is Tyrone going to be really, really tested here.
Are they going to win it though, Donegal?
I think the loss of McBrady and the loss of Owen Van Gallagher is massive for them. I think it's a pity for any football supporter. I think Donegal at full strength were a very exciting prospect this year, not just for this match, but potentially what they could do in competing with the likes of Dublin. The loss of them two players is massive at both ends of the field. They were absolutely critical to Donegal's new style of play. I think with that damage, I think this is a huge opportunity for Tyrone to go there and beat Donegal in Balgofay, which is would be a massive psychological blow for Donegal and a huge cap for Tyrone. So for me, I'm going to, bias obviously included, go with Tyrone by one to spare.
Right, okay. Well, we look forward to it. And enjoy the match, and we'll chat to you again next week, no doubt.
Thanks, man.
Great stuff there from Enda McGinley. It's, what way are you calling it yourself, Anthony?
Oh, I agree with him. I think Eoin Gallagher, I mean, we mentioned him before. I think he was there or thereabouts for really pushing on for an all-star potentially. McBrearty loss. I watched, you know, Donegal really closely last week. The Murphy thing is he's playing with that kind of confidence again. He's firing fellas out of his way. He's going to take the challenge on massively. Tyrone have been on the road now a long time this year, you know, like since the Meath game in Navan, you know, they've been kind of tipping on. Have they really been improving? Yes, they have. I think they've been getting more confident. I think they've been unearthing a few players, but they're still not kind of really cutting anyone open. I think Petey Hart is massive for them. What he brings. But I still think that Donegal just have that extra little bit. I really do. I think with the two fellas, if they had those two, I would be entirely confident with them. Because I think, as we mentioned maybe earlier on in the year, they're a team that possibly could have really challenged against Dublin. But yeah, I'm going to go with them. I think they'll just get over the line. But I think, like Enda, I think it will be a tactical affair. But you know, Bonner, I think has an idea that he just wants to open up, and he kind of wants to kind of go for teams much more than previous management. So, I think it'll be all guns blazing. Like, I mean, that place now, as regards atmosphere, is ferocious. Like, I mean, that was the preliminary game. I think it was like in April. I remember it was like really early on in the year, and the whole place was on a knife edge. You said about Morgan. Oh, every time Morgan came up to take a free, you know, he got, and the first one I think went wrong. And that was it. They were just on him. And it was so close. They were hounding him right in behind the goal. He was standing about 20, 25 yards outside of his goal line, you know, just to get away from the abuse that was coming from behind him. So it's going to be tense.
Before you wrap up, we need to get your predictions. I just realised we haven't got your predictions on. We've got your prediction that Donegal are going to beat Tyrone. Against Enda McGinley, very controversially. Well, let's just say that you're pretty, Dublin are going to beat Roscommon, but like, I mean, that's
I definitely would go with that one. Yeah.
Then the other two games, what are you thinking?
Kerry.
Yeah. Complete with the rolling R.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No matter what Dara says, Dara has absolutely, he's embedded that stuff now into the Kildare minds, the Kildare psyche. Yeah. Whoever Keane O'Neill has as the psychologist, he's trying to unravel the work that Dara has done yesterday.
I can see Keane O'Neill putting Tomás O'Shea's article up on the dressing room wall, the one from weeks and weeks and weeks ago before the Carlow match, where Thomas calls him a data geek and he didn't really get on well with Kerry players. And I can see Keane O'Neill coming on and kicking a few points himself just to put the sword into Kerry season.
I think they'll do it.
So then the key part of the Kerry result is what happens in Salt Hills.
Yeah. Like, I said Galway to you earlier on, but I'm you know, it all depends on who they want. Like, I mean, the one team, obviously, that it's okay, Dublin, you know, because, you know, Gavin will be in a situation where who does he play? You know, does he play second string? If the second string come on and blitz Roscommon, what does that do for his semi-final and his lineup and stuff like that? So he's definitely in control. But Walsh is in a trickier situation, as in he's, does he rest? Does he not rest? Does he go all out? And then obviously with one eye on who they'd like to get. I think he's the type of guy that just keeps going.
So Galway to win?
I think they want to pit themselves against someone like McManus and see can they shut him down. And if they can do that, I think Monaghan will struggle. Yeah, so Galway will win.
All right, okay. So Dublin, Donegal, Kerry and Galway. I'm sure they're all going to be correct. We'll be talking about Nostradamus, Milesy, this time next week.
Yeah, I'm like Johnny here. Probably absolutely. I might get one out of four.
Well, we'll see about that. Hopefully, like, if Dublin is the one out of the four, then we're really in for a treat of a weekend, because, like, The shocks, well, although there's no real kind of shock that would make it an amazing weekend. It's all about the football that's in store, really, to be honest.
Yeah.
There's a bit more of that coming on OTB AM again tomorrow morning. Thank you very much for your company this morning, Anthony.
Not at all.
We'll chat to you again soon. More hurling as well tomorrow morning. And we'll be reacting to one of the biggest nights, hopefully, in the history of Irish hockey. They're up against India tonight. It's on terrestrial TV at 6 o'clock. We're back on radio tonight at 7 o'clock. It's Thursday night. Nathan will be on with all the good stuff looking ahead to the weekend as well. As I say, Adrian's back in the hot seat tomorrow from 7:45 a.m. We'll chat to you then. Bye-bye for now.
So, if you like this, you'll probably also like OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream or catch the show live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook or offtheball.com every morning from 7:45 a.m.